Welcome back. You're listening to KPFK on 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Los Angeles. This is your Voices from the Frontline segment at the 4 o'clock hour for the public affairs here at KPFK. My name is Manuel Criollo, and I'm here with my co-host, Damon Azali. So next we have Luis Carrillo. He is the lawyer for the family of Susy Peña Lopez. As many of you know, on July 10th, Susy Peña, and along with her father, Jose Peña, were essentially killed by the LAPD in a standoff and in Watts of Los Angeles. So we have here Luis to give us a little bit of an update about the case and, you know, have a further conversation about the relationship of the Latino and Chicano community with the LAPD and law enforcement in general in Los Angeles. Welcome to the show, Luis Carrillo.
Muchas gracias. Thank you. And I also just want to clarify that my colleagues on the case are Moreno, Becerra, Guerrero, and Casillas, and who've done a lot of civil rights work in the past.
So, Luis, why don't you give some folks the scenario, what happened from the point of view of Susy Peña?
Well, what our investigation is in its preliminary stages, and we have more questions that remain unanswered than we actually have questions that have been answered. And so there's a lot of discovery, a lot of investigative work that continues to be needed to be done, and certainly we do not have the coroner's report on the coroner's autopsy of both Susy Peña and her father, and we don't have the police reports on their investigation. But clearly right now, the LAPD tactics have to be very, very strongly questioned. There appears to be a lack of command and control. There was no cohesive tactical plan that worked. There does not appear to have been a well-thought-out plan. Certainly, there was not enough time given to negotiations. I question whether they brought in mental health experts. I don't think the negotiators tried hard enough. I don't think that Bratton was being completely honest with the news media when he claimed that there was no indiscriminate firing. I had myself discovered 7 bullet entry or bullet shots that entered into the building that were totally wild, totally indiscriminate. But it's still at its preliminary stages, and it's kind of premature to give any definitive conclusions as to what fully happened there. But insofar, Bratton has changed two aspects of his public statements. At first, he claimed that Raul Peña fired to the first arriving officers. Later, he modified that to say that, no, he fired at the second group of arriving officers. And so in their own statements, they've been reanalyzing or modifying or clarifying their position.
Luis, I mean, I think what you were just saying around Chief Bratton, I think is really interesting, because as soon as it came out, the way he was talking about Susy's father was he was crazy on drugs, he's a criminal, you know, basically saying everything to, like, blame him as opposed to taking extra responsibility for killing a 19-month-old. So I see this also in the context of this is, you know, several months after the Devin Brown shooting, which you had, you know, a young black man who was shot 10 times. You have a couple months after Watts, when you had the sheriff's department going and shooting 120 shots into an SUV, which just was actually said that was fine. They shot so much they actually shot some of their own deputies. They said that was fine. So kind of within this context, has there been anything in terms of looking at who makes the shots? Like, is it actually part of the policing procedures now? Is it because Braddon is actually calling these out, or is this something that was existing before he got to the LAPD?
I cannot answer that question. See, Braddon has a history. He has the baggage that he brings to L.A. from New York. Braddon was involved, was chief of police in New York at a time when Antonio Rosario and his cousin were killed by New York detectives.
They were face down, right, on the floor.
Subject of a documentary called Justifiable Homicide, where a city agency of New York recommended prosecution for the killers of these two young Puerto Rican men. And Braddon ignored the findings, downplayed the findings of the city agency, said that they were, the city agency was in a rush to judgment. And Braddon basically completely ignored the recommendations of the city agency. And in effect, he helped to cover up the murder of two young Puerto Rican young men. And so he comes to L.A. with Los Angeles Police Department has a long history, along with the sheriff's, of covering up police misconduct, covering up excessive use of force. And so, in this case, I don't think that the police deliberately killed Susie Pena, the baby. I think their tactics were totally flawed. I think they were extremely negligent. I think that some of the things that they did backfired, and so an innocent little angel was killed. And that indicates lack of command and control. They could have waited it out longer. They had the perimeter contained. Raul Pena was not going anywhere. They should have given the negotiations more time. But I don't want to be put into a position of where I'm trying to, or it appears that I'm trying to justify the actions of a very irresponsible man. And so it's crazy to have a gun in front of police officers, let alone with a child with you. But that's separate and apart. That's totally different from the main issue. And the main point is that police bullets killed a little baby. That is the, no matter how much Braddon attacks the family, at one point he called the family of Lorena Lopez, the mother of this angel. At one point he called the family dysfunctional. But no matter how much he attacked the family, Braddon cannot ignore the fact that it was police bullets that took the life of an innocent little angel. And we have to separate that from the irresponsible actions of the father.
We're on the phone with Luis Carrillo. He's one of the lawyers for the family of Susie Pena, the 19-month-old child that was shot by the LAPD on July 10th. You know, Luis, one of the interesting things that has come out of this has been a lot of community activism, particularly in the Latino Mexicano community. I know Jose Peña was Salvadoreño. One of the interesting things that makes me think about it has, I'm assuming that police brutality or the wrongful misconduct of police on the Latino community is fairly high. I remember as, you know, going through my teens, being stopped a lot during my teens. Why is the outrage, even though there's been a lot of outrage in terms of this, of the death of Susie Pena, in general, I would say there's sort of a less of that anger when there is misconduct on the police, on the Latino community. Why do you think that is, in contrast to the Black community?
There's differences. There's a strong, very conservative philosophy within the Latino community of respecting law enforcement, particularly among Mexican Americans as opposed to the immigrant community in general, who come from countries where the police abuse, and they come to this country and the police abuse here also. But I think that the outrage is instantaneous in the Black community when a 13-year-old, 14-year-old young African-American young man gets killed by police officers. The outrage is strong, it's immediate, and it's national. And in that respect, they're more sophisticated or organized in terms of mobilizing their leaders, elected officials, religious people. And also you have to accept the fact that the black congressional leaders, such as Maxine Waters, generally are not as timid as Latino congressional people in denouncing police abuse. See, the community, Latino community, they want law enforcement. They want police protection. But we don't need police brutality. And too many Latino elected officials, they focus only on the police protection and not on enough denouncing the police brutality. Mm-hmm. And police brutality in L.A. has a long history. Both the LAPD and both the sheriffs have committed excessive use of force for the last decades. In the movie Zoot Suit, remember it documented that the Marines and the Navy personnel would beat up the young Mexican-American Zoot Suiters?
Mm-hmm.
And then the police would come and arrest the beaten victims and let the Navy personnel go. I don't know if that answered your question.
No, of course. No, I think that's those are obviously really important aspects. I think the concept of leadership, the concept of what's our relationship with law enforcement is very important. Let me ask you this: we got about 2 minutes to wrap up here. This question around one of the interesting things that happened after the death of Susy Peña and her father has been the very good response from the black community. Where, you know, I went to a couple of the rallies and people were out there and it was a pretty mixed crew of people. But yet we didn't see that same response from the Latino community when they killed Devin Brown. Again, how real is the unity? And then two, why isn't there that same response from that community, from the Latino community and Mexicano community to the black community?
Well, I think the unity is very real at elected official level. For example, I know that Maxine Waters supported Antonio Villaraigosa. I know that this morning I was observing a news conference with Cristina Chavez, granddaughter of Cesar Chavez, and Reverend Al Sharpton, forming a new coalition of Latino and African Americans to unite young people so that there's less hostility between both groups and more unity. But at the street level, there's still language differences. A lot of recent immigrants don't speak English. And then there's a few folks in the black community who resent what they perceive to be illegal immigrants. So we still have a lot of work to go to build a better, stronger coalition. And it's unfortunate that La Raza doesn't en masse join together with the African-American community when a 14-year-old young black man gets killed. And it's an outrage. And I'm still outraged what happened in 1954 or 55 when a 14-year-old black teenager named Emmett Till went to the South to visit his uncle and merely for whistling at what the white people said was a white woman. He was murdered. And his body was so disfigured that not even the Republican administration of Dwight D. Eisenhower.
All right. I think, Luis, we actually have to get to the next show. Well, we'd like to thank you for being on the show and like to really wish you luck in the case. Today we had Elise Buick, Otis Cavers, and Luis Carrillo. We also have music from Ken Booth, Black Star, KRS-One. And this is from the Hip Hop for Respect album. You can listen to previous Voices shows at www.thestrategycenter.org. And we would like to thank our producer, Alan Minsky, production assistant, Lisa Adler, and our engineer, Maggie LePique. We'll see you next week with Voices from the Front Lines. Up next is Beneath the Service with Susy Weissman. Walking around with a stick and ready to blast with the wrath of a hollow tip. And the fact